Yeah, how's it going? I'm going to need you to move over there. Yeah, and if you could just tune in and listen to ArtCast, that'd be great. Thanks a lot. Yeah, thanks, Mr. Lundberg. Hey, if you didn't see the movie Office Space, you have no idea what that was all about. But hey, I am your host, Ron Jacobs, coming to you once again on ArtCast, where we are bringing you yet another conversation from VS Live San Francisco, where I am chatting with Deborah Carrada about object finding. Yeah, you know, data mining's been around for a while. A lot of people kind of are like, you know, it's cool for a little demo, but I don't know if I'd ever use it. But object mining, now that is some very cool stuff. I want you to think about what you might do with it as you listen to Deborah. Let's give it up for Deborah Carrada. You were the podcast pioneer for my podcasting career. Actually, it was this time last year at VS Live where we sat down to record an ill-fated podcast that never made the air because of a rookie mistake that I myself made.
That's okay. We were just moaning about something anyway, so.
That's right. As I recall, it was something about VB and not supporting VB and patterns and practices application
Enterprise
blog.
Library.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yes. And it still only is in C#. So.
But you know what, though? The composite UI application block, I think, has a VB version. And the smart client team heard you loud and clear. So all of the smart client blocks are going to be both. Okay, so maybe that'll put some pressure on the enterprise library team. Who knows? But being one of the experts here speaking at VS Live, I thought I would talk to you today about some interesting work that you've done recently. So you were telling me about an article that you wrote for Code Magazine. What was that article about?
It was on object binding. I know binding has been something we've been told forever since VB3, if I recall, not to use in any real applications. You know, it was only something that you did if you needed a prototype or something to manage your basic admin duties with, but you wouldn't write a real business application and use binding. Well, now, however many 20 years later, however long it's been, we finally have a binding story that's really good. So I've been writing a lot about object binding, speaking about object binding, and really, truly enjoying it, and I'm in the process of writing a book.
You know, it's funny that you mention the history of binding because, gosh, it was more than 10 years ago now. I think it was about 12 years ago when I was living here in the San Francisco area, working on another client-server Windows development tool, and our development manager came to me and said, "Our competitors are killing us with these little demos they build. You know, they just come in and the sales guy shows how you can assemble an app in 5 minutes and they're just killing us with these things. We've got to do something." So I went away and invented this whole data binding scheme for their tool, and it worked, you know, and you could build the app in 5 minutes, but it wouldn't be an app that you would build for anything serious, right? And I was amazed, though, how many people wanted to use it. And it was very elegant, very, you know, wired up everything dynamically at runtime, but it was kind of slow, which was the downside. But then in the second version, I made it more like just general code generation. So at design time, you kind of set up everything, and then it just hardwired all the controls to the data sources. So anyway, the second version performed much faster, but still wasn't very useful for real applications because it wasn't very extensible, which was the downside. Once I fixed the performance, then it wasn't extensible at all. So, but I've heard the same thing. You know, people would go, "Oh, data binding, come on, give me a break. That's something that's only, you only see Microsoft people doing demos with that." But now with .NET 2.0, it's gotten pretty cool, hasn't it?
Object binding in particular. Object binding is a type of data binding. You can still bind to databases in doing a, you know, two-tier kind of application. But the coolest part and the part that I'm most excited about is the object binding portion or the object binding kind of data binding. With object binding, unlike normal data binding, you're actually binding to your code in your business objects and not binding to some Microsoft generated code or binding directly to database tables and fields. So that's very exciting because it's basically unlimited in its extensibility because you're binding to your own code. So whatever you would write is what it will bind to. So that is incredibly exciting for me. The book that I'm writing is called Doing Objects in Visual Basic 2005, and it covers all of the basic techniques for not only doing object-oriented design and development, but then also implementing all of the object binding. And it's very interesting to see how much that you can do with it using all of your own business logic and all of your own validation and everything all in your business component and not having to have a lot of code in your user interface.
Yeah, because that was the big problem with binding to like a data set or something, right? You had to manage all these extensibility hooks to try to do validation and whatnot. That was a hard thing to do.
Lots of events all over your UI, and so it wasn't encapsulating all of that in your business objects where basically they belong.
Well, you know, and I've always been an object kind of guy. I don't know. Data sets are nice, but they kind of make my skin crawl when I see just this big hunk of unstructured data, and you know, we're just going to link to it. And I just like to have an object. If I'm working with the customer table, I want to have a customer object to work with.
And I still am using data tables in my code to populate my business objects with. So I'm still making use of data tables, data sets, or you can use data readers to populate your controls, which is what Rocky Lodka does in his object binding. So you have, again, lots of options there because you're controlling how your business object works. So you can have your business object call a data access component like the data access component that's provided by the enterprise library and actually have it return you a data set or a data table that you then populate your objects with. So you create a factory method of some type that builds your object and then it binds it to the UI using the object binding techniques. So it's really, really nice.
Yeah, you know, so you're writing a book, you said. Yeah. So you know what? I was thinking about, there's been a lot of news lately about this Oprah controversy with that Million Little Pieces book and the Oprah. But you know what? I thought, Oprah has a book club. I should have a book club. I should have like Ron's book club so like I could recommend good books. Because, you know, people are always asking me, what's a good book? And I go, I don't know. But, you know, it would be a good idea, right?
That is a very good idea.
I'm going to do it.
Okay.
And maybe when you get your book ready, you send me a draft, I'll read it. And if I think it's good, I'm going to put it in the book club.
Okay. I have only have three of chapters left to go.
All right. Well, there you go. Well, so there, you heard it here on ArtCast. I'm committing to the book club. Okay.
Okay.
You know, so let's see. Well, but I totally lost track of where we were. Okay, we were talking about data binding and object binding and whatnot. So when you were deciding to research this topic, was that just this kind of fell out of your going, I'm writing a book about objects, I'm going to have to deal with object binding and better go research it? Is that how you decided to do it?
No, I was involved with Microsoft in terms of the early alphas and betas, and so I got to see very early on what they were doing with their binding, both the data adapter, a table adapter binding, and also all of their object binding. And so I got very excited about all of that. With the book, I just had to decide how much of it I wanted to cover, how in-depth that I wanted to be, whether I wanted to cover every possible choice or select a choice. So the research that went into the book was more with regard to what, in my opinion, is the best path for creating really good object-oriented applications using an N-layered approach, you know, separating your business logic from your user interface code from your data access piece. And that's really what the book is focused on. So I opted not to cover, you know, doing the data binding to the database. I opted not to cover table adapters or any of that because I don't think that that is really what best practice is yet. So I opted to go with what, in my experience with doing several .NET 2.0 projects, is with the object binding, and that's what I covered. There's also a lot of complexities that you need to deal with if you're going to fully implement all of the features of object binding. For example, if you set up your error provider control correctly, the object binding will automatically put your error provider control next to whichever controls have errors in them with regard to validation.
Wait a minute. Okay, let me back up for a second, because sometimes people don't know what these things are. So an error provider is what?
That little red dot with the exclamation point in that you can have. It was available in the first versions of .NET, where you could say my last name property required, and the user didn't put it in, so I'm going to put this little icon next to the last name. The user moves their cursor over it, and it presents a tooltip that says, you know, last name is required. So it provides you field-level validation error messages. And with 2002 and 2003, you could put the control on the form and manually write the code to tell it, you know, what text to put in it and what control to be next to and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
With object binding, it will handle all of that automatically.
So they've come up with a way where in my object, I can validate and say, hey, you didn't put a last name, and set something on my object, and then the UI will automatically, error provider will show up next to the last name field with a nice little red thing and all
that. Exactly. That's exactly correct. And there's two ways to do it. One that's really easy. All you have to do is throw an exception. So if any of your properties throw an exception, it'll automatically pop the error icon next to that with whatever exception text you have, but that's not very elegant. Mm-hmm. So they also have an interface that you can implement, and if you implement that interface, then it provides a richer experience with regard to managing your errors. And so I cover all of that in the book. The article that I wrote for Code Magazine didn't quite go into that level of detail, but it definitely, you know, with the book, you have a lot more pages available to cover all of that kind of stuff.
So, you know, this is really great because, my first exposure to the object binding, and this is weird, you know, because I work at Microsoft, you know, people are like, don't you, like, play with all those alphas and betas and all that? And the answer is no, because I just don't have time to do it. I have other things I have to do. But when we were working on the composite UI application block for patterns and practices, they're quick start samples. I started looking at these, you know, and I'm trying to understand how it works because we're going to do webcasts about them. And one of the first things I do is, you know, trying to understand how something works. I bring up the UI and then I, you know, start looking at the UI code and see if I can follow it down into the object layers. When I look in the UI code and there's like no connection to anything in the business layer, I see like, how does this data get populated? I see it's in the forms, but I don't see it happening in the code, right? I don't see that little set company name or text company name dot text equals company dot text or something
right.
Like that, right?
That's the code that's gone.
Yeah, and it's amazing because the UI code is actually very, very clean. There's very little there. And it's just dumb, boring code anyway. It's like, you know, where you're moving the values back and forth between the object and the property. So it was very, very cool to see it gone.
Right.
Is there anything special I need to do, though, for in terms of the way I think about creating objects that make them friendlier to binding? Do I have to implement, and we talked about that error provider, but do I have to implement some wacky bindable interface or something like that?
If you just want to do very straightforward binding, you don't have to do anything other than have properties.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that also is somewhat different because it used to be that the big buzz was to have stateless objects. And that basically meant they didn't keep state, which basically meant they didn't have any properties. So the industry is kind of moving away from the stateless concept because of the improvements. It used to be for performance reasons or for scalability or because the way the web works with being, you know, basically disconnected. But all of those problems over the past several years have been solved other ways. So the whole purpose for stateless objects really isn't there anymore. And so you can make more stateful objects, meaning objects that have lots of properties. And as long as you have a property on your object, you can use it for binding. So every property is then bound to its associated control, whether that be a text box or a date control or whatever kind of control you would want. Or you can do more complex binding and bind your entire object to a grid. So you could see your whole list of customers show up in a grid with by just doing the binding and then writing the one line of code that associates your data source. So it's relatively easy.
Well, and in fact, you can even go through the UI to write to, like, even if you don't want to write that one line of code, you can go through the UI to pick an object binding source, right?
Yes, but you still do need to write the one line of code that associates the binding source with a particular object instance.
Oh, okay.
So there is there is still one line of code.
Gosh, unlike got it one line of code. They can't get rid of that, man.
No, with the data binding, they generate that one line of code if you're binding directly to data. But for object binding, they don't really know what your instance is or how you're going to get your instance, whether you're going to have a create type factory method or how you're going to get that instance created. So that's the one line of code you need, is to create whatever instance and associate it to the data source of the binding source.
Let me inject something here about the stateful versus stateless, because actually one of the key reasons why say Complus, for example, brought us stateless objects was for transactional integrity. Because by using just-in-time activation with Complus, if you had state that was created in the middle of a transaction, we force you to dump that state because we deactivate your object before the transaction's completed. The reason is not so much for performance or scalability or anything else, but for transactional integrity, because your object doesn't know the outcome of the transaction. It's deactivated before the transaction outcome is known, which is good for scalability because we can go on and do something else while the DTC finishes the transaction. But if you were able to hold state across a transactional boundary, you would have to know whether the transaction succeeded or failed, because if the transaction failed, the state you're holding might be invalid, right? So then you can't keep that around. So you got to let it go. So anyway, that was one of the reasons why stateless was sort of forced upon the world in a mold, you know, when we thought that everybody would build distributed apps with them hosted in Complus. But I think there's kind of different styles of objects, right? And I think of the kind of object that I'm going to use to bind UI controls to is something like it's almost like a container for data with a lot of properties and maybe some very lightweight kind of logic around validation and whatnot. Some people like to put the persistence logic right in that, say it's a customer object, right? Some people like to put it in the customer object, maybe even as static methods or whatever. But some people prefer to have a whole nother object or maybe a service-like object, right, that's going to accept a customer when it actually act on it. Do you take any position in those kind of debates?
Well, one of the things that I really like to do with my classes is really make them focus on their purpose. Mm-hmm. And so for a customer class, you know, is its sole purpose just to shuffle data around, or does it really have another purpose? And with maybe something as simple as customer, maybe its only purpose is really to shuffle data around. But if you have something like an invoice, it has a lot larger of a purpose. It needs to know how to calculate itself. It needs to know how to do all of the functions that are involved with processing an invoice. It needs to maybe know how to, you know, remove items from inventory when the invoice is posted, or, you know, all these other business processes that could occur. So I think it's really important to define your object model using good object-oriented design techniques, using CRC cards or some type of design tools to help you actually look at the responsibilities of each of your objects. And then once you have your basic design done, then you can look at the binding scenario. You shouldn't really be defining your business objects for binding necessarily.
Well, but there is One key reason why a lot more people have thought about their components more as a simple container, and that's service-oriented architecture, right? Because if I have you use the invoice example, right? When you were talking about it, I'm thinking, well, if I were building a system like that, I'd probably have a web service that does invoice processing, right? And it does all that stuff. It might return an object that represents the invoice, but this object's a relatively simple container with properties and whatnot. The real work happens back at the service, right?
Yes, and those you almost can think of as a different purposed mm-hmm. class. So even though you might have your invoice class, you know, back on your server that knows how to do all of the invoice processing, you also might have an invoice entity class whose only purpose in life is to shuffle the data around. Because with a service-based architecture, most of what you're doing, at least with Visual Studio, is passing around, you know, XML. So it really is only data. It's not the logic. You can't really pass, you know, the coding along with the object using a service-oriented architecture. So then you do have these special purposed objects that are your, you know, basically data transfer objects, your kind of your own little data tables or whatever that, you know, whose only purpose is to maintain that data for transfer to and from your service. But the actual real work then is done in your invoice object that would then be in your service. And at that point, then you're not binding to that because that's running on, you know, a server in New Jersey or whatever. It's not where your UI is. And then at that point, you could, you know, consider actually binding to your entity object. It kind of depends on what your overall architecture is. A lot of the clients that I'm working with that are doing very focused business processes have been installed on end user systems with all three layers on the user system so that there isn't a need really for a service for the basic part of the business app. Now, it might call out to a service for a particular process, but the majority of the logic and everything is actually there in the business layer sitting on the end user's computer. So I think that, again, you need to really look at the purpose of your application, how it will be physically deployed in order to create these purposed classes that will then basically build the logic of your application.
So we've talked a little bit about some, you know, what kind of object things you need to do. Was there anything about object binding that sort of surprised you as you kind of looked at this and went, whoa, what about that?
I think the thing that was most surprising was when I'd finished writing my first chapters on, you know, building the UI, building the middle tier component, building the data access component, and I looked back and it was amazing how many pictures there were and how little code that was actually required to create basically a full-blown application. I mean, this application does your basic, you know, create, update, delete operations for two different things, products and customers. It maintains a list of purchases that a customer makes. And I was completely surprised when I was done as to actually how little code that I'd written and how many pictures I had, because so much of it is done, you know, with Windows or with, you know, setting options or modifying properties through designers, and not a whole lot of it actually had to be written with code. But yet using object binding means that there isn't a whole lot of generated code either that you have to carry around. So I just was kind of surprised at when I was finished how little code I had to have written to actually get my application pretty much all operational.
Yeah, you know, I can just hear some people out there groaning, going, oh, no, less code. You know, some code slingers, you know, that's what they live for. You know, why they want to write lots of code. Well, write some more important code, because this kind of code that we're replacing was that boring, stupid code that you didn't want to write anyway, right?
And that's the code that's not in the book. I mean, when it comes to, you know, executing the logic, you know, the more complicated kinds of logic, like confirming a customer's credit status or whatever, you know, none of that code's there.
Yeah.
So that's really the code that's left. And so I guess the point I was trying to make is that the foundation of everything that you need to do to get the basics all operational is so simple that you can then focus on, you know, the important code. What is your business logic? How are you going to make that invoice process through everything that it needs to process through? And you don't need to focus on how am I going to display the result to the user. That's when you just you know, drag your business object onto your form and all your controls show up, and that part then is easy.
So that's pretty sweet, I must admit, because so you're saying actually the Visual Studio Designer will allow you just to drop a business object on the form and it will just like generate stuff?
Generates all the controls, yes. So you can drag your business object from your data sources window over onto a form. So if you had customer, for example, and you dragged it, dropped it onto a form, it would automatically create all of the labels, text boxes, combo boxes, check boxes, whatever would be appropriate based on the type of field that you have. And it's adjustable. So you could decide that I want this field to be a radio button and this one to be a checkbox or whatever. So
now that's really cool, because the thing I wrote like 12 years ago, it made everything just a text box. But this is actually smarter than that.
It's much smarter than that. Plus, it gives you complete control. So if you actually build your own controls, so say you have your own fancy calendar control that knows how to handle multi-formatted dates or whatever, you could actually hook that in so that when you dragged anything of type date over, it would use your control. So again, it works very well with your code, which is one of the things I'm most excited about. When I first tried using table adapters, which are the, you know, connecting to the type data sets, I was shocked at, you know, it generated like 600 lines of code. And I was just like, I don't want all that code in there. And then I changed my table and all that code has to be regenerated and yuck, yuck, yuck. I just want my code. You know, I'm one of those kind of programmers that likes my code, you know. I want it to be mine. I want to understand it. I want to know what's going on. I want to be the one who put it there. And the other nice thing about object binding is it generates very little code for you. It's mostly generating all of that yucky stuff. Like, who wants to sit down and put 12 text boxes on a form? So that's what it's doing. It's generating all of that UI code that you would manually doing by dragging the controls on yourself. You can, though, we talked a little bit I'll go about, you know, how you can just create properties on your objects and it will just work. But to really make it fully functional, you do need to implement some interfaces. So we talked about the iError info interface. There's also an iNotify property changed, which you can implement if you want the user interface to recognize when your code changes the property.
Oh, so if you had like some... Like when they change, when they enter the zip code, let's say, you go off and look up the city based on the zip code, and then you change that, you would fire this thing?
Right, and then it would correctly notify the UI so that it would readjust the property. Otherwise, it doesn't really know to adjust something, so it does that. And there are some other fancier things that you can implement if you want, but I primarily use those two. The other thing that's really useful with 2005, of course, is generics. And I'm sure most people have heard about generics. And it's really kind of an odd name for something, and I'm sure you're very familiar with it. But what generics really do is let you be specific. So it's sort
it
of...
It should be specifics.
Yeah, shouldn't it be? Shouldn't it be specifics? But it lets you write...
I don't think the name would work as well.
No. But it lets you write very generic code that can be very specific. And so one of the things that you can do is leverage that. So there's a binding list, and in VB we call it binding list of T. Without the of keyword in C#, I don't know how they say that. Do they still use of? I don't know.
In the
yeah, but how do you
bracket.
Say it?
Oh, well...
Verbally, do they still say of?
Yeah, I guess people kind of do say. I never really thought about it, you know. But yeah, I guess people do say that.
They do say of, even though physically it's just
not there.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, binding list of T allows you then to create lists of business objects that then know how to bind. So that's how you would get like a grid type style interface, is by putting your customers into a binding list, and then you can bind to that binding list, and that gives you an editable grid of customers. So there's a lot of nice things in there, but it's not perfect.
Yeah?
Yeah, there's a couple things that doesn't really do real nice yet.
Okay, and right here we're going to hit the dirt on binding, binding. Okay, what's the dirt?
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, it does not do radio buttons very well. And I think part of that problem is that Windows Forms does not have a radio button group control like the web does. And so there's no single control that you can really bind the property to. So what you end up having to do is creating a separate property for each little radio button you'd want. So if you had, like stock options, we're going to keep it in stock in terms of a product. We're going to keep it in stock. It's going to be special order only, or we're going to buy it from one of our subcontractors or whatever. So you have three choices. You store it in one field. Well, you can't bind that field and get three radio buttons. You have to actually create three separate Boolean fields. Mm. And then you have to write the code that maps the one physical field in your table to three separate properties on your object in order to get it to bind correctly.
Yeah, because see, like what I would probably do normally is I'd want to have an enum in my code. And then I would, of course, map the enum to a value that I store in the actual database, right? And then I would have a property that returned the enum. But you're saying I could have that, but I'd still also have to have, each Boolean on off for each of those values.
If you wanted to auto bind using a radio button, yes. I think the only real solution to that is to have a radio group box like the web does, where you could bind to that group and it would know then what values to put in it. So that's one thing. The other thing is that you still, you frequently really wish that you could iterate through the properties. So it would be nice to have something other than having to use reflection to give you all the properties of your object. So that there would be some built-in language feature that gave you the list of properties that your business object has, kind of like it gives you the list of forms that your Windows UI has, or the list of properties off of the controls, or the list of controls on a form.
Why would you want to do that?
Well, there are some cases, like for validation, that you might want to go through if you want to create your own mapper to your table, because still ultimately, even though it's taking care of the binding to the UI, you still have to take care of mapping it back to the data. So if you wanted to write something generalized, I can't use the word generic in a general, so it's now generalized. If you want to write something generalized that would know how to map all of your properties into fields in a table, you have to actually still do that one by one. My last name property goes into dot right. item, parent, quote, whatever. It would be nice if, especially if you did create a constraint for yourself that you always made your field names and your property names the same, that it could just loop through and do that more easily. You can do it now, but you have to use reflection for it. And, you always get worried about performance when you're having to use reflection. So it'd be nicer if they gave you, like a little control array kind of like thing for all of your properties on your business object so that you could easily, iterate through them all.
Yeah, years ago when .NET first came out and I was kind of, exploring it in the very, very beginning, I looked at the attributes and I thought, these attributes look really cool. Like there's a lot of potential there. I'm not sure what I would do with them, and I started thinking about, well, one idea would be to use them to help me with mapping to the database, right? So I'd put an attribute and say, like a database attribute, and say what column this thing goes on or what table or whatever. Then I could have a helper class that would look and, know where to put the thing. And I actually built one that did that, and it was pretty easy to do. But yeah, you have to get your hands a little dirty with reflection stuff to do anything about that.
Or the other thing would be validation. Wouldn't it be nice to use just attributes and say that the validation properties are required, max length of 15, or semicolon, or whatever delimiter you would want on there, just as an attribute, and not actually have to, because right now you either have to build some kind of rules, fancy rules engine of some type for your validation, which is what Rocky does in his object binding scenarios, or I just create a validation class and then call separate validate methods, so every one of my properties calls whichever validate methods are appropriate for it. Uh-huh. But attributes seems like that would be such a cooler way to,
that,
to put
that would
those
be,
in.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's very doable. Maybe I'll go write one this afternoon.
Yeah, then sell it back to Microsoft. But I guess you can't do that if you're an employee.
Well, the problem is I already work there. They won't pay me for anything. They say, we already own you.
And anything that comes out of your head.
That's right, yeah. So that's interesting. Now, one thing you mentioned that kind of made some question mark go off in my head when you were talking about the radio buttons kind of acting differently in the web scenario versus form. Does object binding behave differently in the web scenario?
Yes, and I kind of touched it and realized that it was completely different and just decided to drop the whole web chapter out of my book because it was so incredibly yucky and different and whatever. So basically, it has the ability to do what it calls object binding, but it doesn't use data sources window. It doesn't use any of the same techniques. And basically, it has, I forgot what it's called. It's not an object. I think it's called just an object source, maybe, that you can bind to, but it doesn't really bind to your business object unless they match this whole slew of rules. Like they have to be public. They have to be, they have to be both read and read write. You can't have public gets and private sets on them for them to work. And there's a whole bunch of limitations on them. So what people like Rocky did is he actually built his own binding control. Because again, unlike Windows, it actually is a control on the toolbar. It's more like the old data control from VB5, you know, the kind that you took off the toolbar and dropped onto your form. It's more like that. And so Rocky wrote his own, and I haven't actually looked at the inside of it, but I understood that it was quite nasty, the amount of code that he had to write to actually get all of that.
And by the way, for people who don't know, Rocky is Rockford Lotka, who is another author and actually a speaker here, who will be actually recording one of these sessions with me later this afternoon. So we'll have to ask him about that.
Have him talk about how much work that was, because I'd be interested to know, too. I'm dying to download it. His work on this is called the CSLA, and it's downloadable off of his website. Probably the easiest thing is just to search for Lotka, if you could figure out how to spell it. And CSLA. You can have him spell it for you, too, later.
Yeah, I think he calls his framework, what, CSLA.net or something like that. Yeah, so if you search for that, you'd probably find it. Of course, I could always post the link when we post this episode on Arcast. So maybe I'll do that if I think about it.
Yeah, because that control is supposed to be up there, but it doesn't. It's not similar at all in how it works. So I focus just on the web one for my book.
Well, you know, there's...
On the Windows one. What did I just say?
The Windows one.
On the Windows one.
Yeah, you said the web one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but there's some good news here, because sometimes people from the outside, you know, kind of go, isn't that weird that here's a thing that works really great in WinForms but doesn't work so great on, or works very differently in ASP.NET, and people don't understand the kind of the way that Microsoft works on the inside. But the ASP.NET team is an amazing team. They have done a fabulous job. People who are web people just totally love ASP.NET. But they were kind of like off doing their own thing, and the Windows Forms guys were off doing their own thing, and they were talking a little bit, probably, and in retrospect, I wish they would have talked more. But the good news is that Scott Guthrie, who for years and years led the web team, got promoted after .NET 2.0 because he's done such a fantastic job. So now he's in charge of the whole thing. So maybe he can pull these guys together and get them better connected, so in the next release it won't have these kind of warts on it.
Well, part of the problem, though, is that Windows and the web don't work the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have so many more issues on the website with, you know, because you can't just keep your instance. I mean, you can't keep your business object instance just easy as pie and have it just automatically know how to deal with everything. I mean, when you're in a web environment, by definition, you're completely disconnected. I mean, it has no idea who you were once it's done giving you whatever page you just requested. And unless you start sticking your objects in session state, which then creates some additional work because you have to make everything serializable. So unless you're going to do something like that, there's really no way to easily keep your instance. So the fact that they can do two-way binding on the web is actually, when you really think about it, it's absolutely amazing that they could even make it work at all. So the fact that it doesn't work like Windows I'm sure doesn't seem like it should matter much that they actually got it to work.
They pulled off a miracle. Okay, we'll cut them some slack. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah. So, but it is hard when you work like I do, where you do a lot of web development and Windows development, because it's, you know, twice as much learning. It's not just learning how to do it one way and then applying it to the web. You have to learn how to do everything two ways. And with 2005, that's one of the most disappointing things in general for me, is that the web has changed so much now from Windows. I mean, in 2002 and 2003, it was nice. You could pretty much, you know, leverage everything that you knew about Windows development, and pretty much, you know, other than the controls were a little bit different, you could pretty much do a lot of the same things. But now with file-based instead of project-based, and the properties are different, the project properties are different, how you set those up, all the binding is different. I mean, it's, you have to doubly learn everything. And since I've been so focused on learning the one, I haven't spent too much time learning how to do the binding in the other yet, but very soon, because I have to do both in my job. So,
wow. So that, you know, well, I think they could probably make some improvements in terms of, you know, at least the experience being similar anyway. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll have to cut them some slack there. But let me ask you one last question to kind of wrap this up, though, because being that this is ArcCast, we think about architecture. And so I'm thinking, how does object binding change the architecture? Does it change it at all, do you think, or is there any impact on architecture of an application?
I think that for me personally, most of the systems I had been architecting with, like VB5 and 6, for example, were very much stateless, and that goes back to kind of what we were saying before. And so object binding changes that, in that it does assume you're going to maintain state. So I'm not sure that object binding itself changes your architecture as much as some of the tools and features and capabilities of 2005, and, you know, the deployment features that it has and all of those kinds of things really can change the way that you architect a system, because you have so many more choices. It doesn't have to be, you know, for simpler deployment, you have web. For hard, impossible deployment, you have Windows. So everybody goes web because you don't want to deal with DLL hell. I mean, all of that kind of stuff is gone. So I think it almost opens the door for more architectural choices, because you can pick a Windows app because you want a Windows app, not because you don't want to have to deploy it. So I think that that affects the way that you're going to think about how you're going to build your application.
Well, I think the one real interesting example to me, and this is the one because I spent a lot of time studying it, was the composite UI application block, which uses a model view controller pattern. And that pattern works very well with object binding, because your model persists, right? You always have the model, and they have this notion of workspaces in the composite UI block. So there's a place to stick those things, that invoice object, the customer object, and the views can just bind to those very, very nicely. So that's kind of a pre-built architecture, if you will. If you go, well, I don't know where to start with this. Well, you could pick up something like that, composite UI application block, and kind of go with that architecture. And they're actually building a much larger thing called the Smart Client Baseline Architecture around that. So we'll have other kinds of things if you wanted, like offline support and so forth. But anyway, they've done some fantastic work there. And so I'd encourage people to go look at that. But thanks, Deborah, for coming by today.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Deborah Corrado, ladies and gentlemen. Deborah, we finally got your show on the air. After that failed podcast, my very first podcast, I don't know, some kind of glitch happened with the recording thing. And later when I went back and looked at it, I had nothing. We had this nice talk for a long time and got nothing. But hey, I don't make those mistakes anymore, because now we know what we're doing here on ArcCast, and I'm so glad to say that. In fact, I had a nice note from Patrick, out in Greece. And Patrick said, "Hey, Ron, I just want to let you know that you've changed the boring commutes to and from the office into a great way of learning about all the stuff I should already know." Well, hey, thanks, Patrick. That's why we're here. That's what we're all about. We're trying to just get the knowledge out to you. So keep listening here on ArtCast.